Actually, that gets a kick forwards into the right.
That intentional runner, it's going to get there. Oh, excuse me. Look at this one.
This could be close. This could be really close.
What's up, people? Welcome back to the Friendly Banter podcast brought to you by Banty. Short intro today. Full disclosure, I actually totally botched the recording that Tom and I did this past week. So we had an epic convo leading up to the players that we were going to preview the tournament and the recording software that we're using. I'm still new to, still figuring out the quirks. Turns out I threw out the entire episode. So that one's on me. Thankfully, I did record an interview separately from the conversation with Tom. So we're going to just play that instead. That interview is with a good friend of the program. His name's Jack Newton. He's a high school senior in Colorado. He is on his way to Oklahoma City University to play on the golf team there. So we dive into his journey through high school golf, kind of why he's looking forward to going to play to college, what that process was like, and a couple other just relevant golf topics as it relates to turning pro, what the path is like for young kids these days. So awesome conversation with Jack that you'll hear now. And sorry, Tom, again, about totally botching this. As always, this episode is brought to you by twoguyswithballs.com. Twoguyswithballs.com is truly the best place to go shopping for golf balls online. Fair prices, great value, whatever you really need to reload some ammunition after your last round. They've got you covered. You could use the code BANTY for 15% off. So head to twoguyswithballs.com, and we'll head to that interview with Jack now.
Okay, today on Friendly Banter, we have a good friend of the program, Jack Newton. Jack, how the hell are you?
I'm doing good, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. For people who don't know, can you give us just a quick maybe bio, quick background on kind of what you've been up to, your life as it relates to golf, and then I think we've got a couple of fun topics to dive in from there.
Yeah, so I'm 18. I'm a senior at Mullen High School, so I was the captain this year on the golf team. Just kind of grinding away right now. So I signed with Oklahoma City University in the fall, around November. So super pumped to go get into the college golf world. It'll be fun. I think the transition between high school to college golf is going to be kind of dramatic and fun, but it's also going to be pretty exciting as well. So I've kind of just been hanging out. Colorado, you know, is really bipolar. Right now it's raining a bunch, and I think this weekend we're going to get about half a foot of snow, hopefully at the best, maybe 2 feet at the worst. So hopefully it stays pretty warm out here so I can get out and start playing again. So yeah. Colorado's crazy as a golfer, but, you know, kind of doing what I got.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. What does your, I don't know if it's your practice schedule or like, because it is impossible to get outside and get on the course during the winter, like what does that look like for you in terms of like staying sharp?
So yeah, I mean, I work with my coach a lot. So her name's Allie Bean. At the club at Ravenna. So that's where I've been at for this past 6 years. In terms of Colorado, we usually either do indoor work, so we have simulators and stuff, or, I mean, I work with the Vision 54 program, which is like a mental game strengthening and conditioning program, so like with a book. And so I'll do a lot of that and then kind of just travel golf tournaments. I mean, that's kind of how I stayed sharp going into my junior year. So right now I'm kind of taking it pretty mellow. I'm signed. I got everything I need to do. So I'm kind of just relaxing, working on my mental game, practicing a bunch. But I mean, last year I was balls to the wall. It was,
yeah,
I played probably six travel golf tournaments between December through March. It was every 2 to 3 weeks I'd be out of state grinding away. I played in the national championship for Hurricane Junior Golf Tour in December in Florida. And then I kind of went through AJGA and Hurricane as well, just kind of going to Arizona and Texas, just kind of doing all that stuff. So it was a lot of time spent at DIA, which is never fun for anybody that's gone through Denver.
Of course.
It's brutal.
I spent so much time there.
It's brutal, but it's been good. I think junior year for golfers is kind of like that. You really got to go time. You either sign to a big power five or you're one of the guys that are more under the radar. That's just trying to find a home. For me, it was, I got into the game super late for college golf. I was a baseball kid growing up, so kind of played golf on the side. I traveled all the time for baseball. I played baseball at Mullen my freshman year, and then kind of ended up being a backup catcher kind of deal, kind of fell through, never really had any fun with it. So I was like, let's go play some golf. Fell in love with it, fell in love with the grind, and then just kind of kept on going from there. So I kind of started playing travel golf tournaments, local tournaments, kind of started grinding away there. I mean, I think anybody starting out in travel golf has got to realize that it's going to be pretty bumpy. And didn't start out great, but then kind of started really piecing things together. High school season, I played great. I've been first team all conference and second team all state for 2 years in a row, and was first team all conference for the last three. But it's been cool. I think the college golf process is super interesting, especially with the new generation of golfers. It used to be if you could shoot 75, you could go play anywhere you want. And now we've got 13-year-olds shooting 64. And you're like, where am I going to end up as an 18-year-old not signed in June, in July? And you're like, what am I going to do? It's a freaky time.
It is so crazy, you know, because that was the world I grew up in. Like when I played in high school, you know, I was like getting a couple D1 looks, but honestly wasn't good enough. I probably didn't play in enough of those travel tournaments. Like I would do the AJGAs, but if you want to really get noticed, like you have to really take it like a job. Like you have to be on the road. It's wild. So like I went D3 and avoided a ton of that craziness and loved it. But D1 definitely is a different world. It was a different world then. And I think to your point now, like kids are just so good. It's crazy.
Unreal. I think looking at me, I mean, kind of my goals with college golf is, I mean, I had some solid D1 looks. I had a few smaller D1 offers, and it was like, okay, do I want to go ride to the bench in Ogden, Utah for 2 years and then hopefully get on? Or do I want to go to a smaller school like Oklahoma City? So Oklahoma City was D1, and then we just moved to NAIA. So we're smaller and we're in the SAC, but we still play against big schools like Oklahoma and Oklahoma State on like the weekends and stuff because we're all at Oaktree National, which is super cool. But I mean, we're smaller. So what's interesting about that is we have a really good team. We were number two in the country going into this year. And I'm like, I'm super appealed by going out and winning a national championship and going out and actually playing versus going watching somebody go win a national championship. I mean, I had Notre Dame, University of North Texas, Texas State, Loyola Marymount, all the kind of those big power five schools. They were looking at me and I'm like,
yeah,
if you give me an offer, what am I going to be able to go do with that? And even if I'm looking at the money, they don't really have any money to give you. They're like, yeah, we'll kind of give you a walk-on spot. I'm like, well, you kind of got to show me the money. I think that's really important as a golfer. I think having skin in the game for both the university and the golfer is really important.
Totally.
So kind of that grind. I mean, I've gone to six different states on visits, and it's like, holy cow, from 1,000 kids to 28,000 kids. You're like, this is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that was the other thing for me was just like, what are they kind of pitching you on? Like, what was the actual, you know, when you're deciding on Oklahoma City, like, what else? I think the money is huge for sure. And then like, kind of what were the other selling points at? Because I imagine like, there's also like the entire college experience that, you know, you're factoring in as well.
For sure. So actually my caddy, his name's Brian Colley. We've been family friends for years. He's actually like my dad's age. He's like my dad's best friend. And he's kind of been like a second dad to me. He's a big Sooners fan. So like when I was around 8 years old, I was just completely converted into the Sooners fan. And so it kind of played a little bit of a factor going out to Oklahoma City, because Oklahoma City is only 15 minutes from Norman. So I can go watch Sooners games all the time, which is really cool. But I think for me, what I talked to coaches about, kind of what my list was whenever I had calls with coaches or went out on visits, was I want to see really good facilities, and I want to see that the school's invested into the golf program. I want to see a coach that's invested into their golf team, and I also want to see kind of like a group of team, like a team that works together versus a team that's really isolated. So you can kind of see that. I mean, I went out to Ave Maria University, which is outside of Naples. They're an NAIA school, and the coach was awesome. Okay. He's kind of an old school guy, older. I loved him. He was one of the best golf coaches I talked to, and he actually ended up leaving the school. And so I lost my offer, and so I had to talk to this whole new coach and generate this whole new plan and process with him, and it kind of just fell through. And I was like, that's kind of what actually ended up having me up at OKC was – I was about to commit to Ave Maria. Billy made a commitment post and everything for Ave Maria. And I was like, oh man, I'm ready to go. Going to Florida. This will be sick. Coach drops, new coach, new team, all of this stuff. And you're like, okay, what am I going to do? And so for me, I think a really big aspect for college golfers that are kind of more under the radar, they aren't going to be a Blades Brown, or they're not going to be one of those top AJGA guys where they're having 100 points and can just go play in the Junior Ryder Cup and the Players Preview this week. Like, you have those top 15 guys that are going to go to Auburn, and they're going to go to Alabama, and they're going to go to all those schools. I think using this platform called NCSA, I think, was crucial for me. It's just this web platform that gives you every email to every college golf program in the country, from D1 to JUCOs. It's unreal. So for me, how I ended up at OKC was I was super pissed that Ave Maria kind of fell through. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do about it? I was sitting on the deck with my dad, and I was like, Dad, what am I going to do? I'm like, I don't know what to do. And he was like, just keep on grinding, put your nose to the grindstone. And I literally that evening, I was like, okay, I'm just going to mass send 20 emails. And OKC ended up being that. 2 days later, the coach responded the next morning, and he was like, hey man, we're interested. Want to come down on a visit? 2 days later, I'm like, I have a long weekend. I go down 2 days later, he gives me an offer. 2 days later after that, I end up committing. So it was like a 2-year process of just stress and fatigue and complete meltdowns after golf rounds to just have it end up being like a 6-day process of signing and committing and getting all that done. So it was super crazy because, I mean, that summer leading up to that, I think the stress was unreal. It was one of the more difficult times I think anybody in my family, let alone me, has experienced. I think me kind of seeping out my stress was not good for anybody in the house by any means. But I mean, it was crazy. I remember going to the USAM qualifying. USAM was at Cherry Hills, so which was in state, which was super cool. And I'm like, all right, I played really good at US Open qualifying. I missed sectionals by 3 shots. And I was like, all right. I'm like, okay. So then went to AM qualifying. I'm like, here we go. I got 36 holes. I have a good D1 following me around. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I just went out and choked. I shot 84, 86. I took like almost dead last. And we're driving back home, and I didn't say a word. And Brian and my dad are in the car, and we're just sitting there, no music, nothing. And we're just like, uh-oh, like, this is not good. And so
those are not fun car rides.
No. And I don't think anybody, and I think the term that I used a lot that summer wasn't even like anger. I wasn't mad. I just knew I had potential because I played golf since I was walking up. So everybody told me, was like, okay, you're a little kid. You can swing a golf club. They're like, you got a bright future. You can do it.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, okay, this kid's like, everybody's calling me a stick, and I have the best handicap at the club. And all of this, and it's like, okay, what are you going to do about it? And you're like, okay, so it's more of that sense of like disappointment. You're like, I know I can do this. And I know I can go out and shoot low 60s, mid 60s, high 60s, whatever I've got to do. I've got to grind it out. And I expect myself whenever I'm on the first tee, I'm like, okay, we're going to birdie the first hole. We're going to birdie the second hole. Like, it's that mindset of whatever there's birdies out there, we're going to go chase it. And I think that kind of wake up call of getting smacked in the face with an 84 and an 86, walking 36 holes with a 2.5 hour rain delay. I think it's just like, you're like, okay, what are we going to do from here? And I think those low moments in golf, especially as somebody wanting to go play in college golf. And I think in college golf, you can kind of see the same thing. And I mean, heck, you can even look at JT last year, missing the cut at every single major, I think those low moments define us more than the high ones do. I think the low moments are kind of those you have to pick a side. And for me, it was, are you going to quit golf or are you going to figure it out and get the job done and go out and get a college golf scholarship and pay for your college? So it was kind of that kind of deciding factor. And I think those low moments of taking those last places and those AJGAs and those big AM qualifiers and junior AM, I think are really defining for a golfer. I think low moments are almost as important, if not more important, than winning. I think for me, going into the summer and those travel golf tournaments that I had on in my junior year, I went down to like three qualifiers for AJGAs and I missed three of them in a row by two shots or less. And it's like, you're just getting beat up. You're just like, okay, I'm spending all of this money. My parents are investing so much of this time and money into this and I'm two shots off. So you're just getting punched in the face every time you're going down there and you're like, what am I doing? And so I think that that aspect of kind of figuring out what rock bottom really is. And I think for me, having a spiritual side of things, for me, I'm a very devout Christian, and I can kind of see with my community around me and the close people I'm around, they're like, look, rock bottom is different for people who are believers, because rock bottom for us, sure, there's worldly things that make us feel at rock bottom, but there's also things to where we know there's hope. I think I was given a lot of hope, even in really dark times where I had no idea what my future was. I think that for me, I've got to give a lot of the glory to Christ with that, because for me, I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea where I was going to end up. My parents were freaking out. My brother was freaking out. Like, nobody knew what was in store for me. And so we sit down and we read the Bible and we pray, and I talk to people who are close to God, and I talk to people who I feel like are really close to me and to God and will kind of lead me down a right path. And it was so cool to see the good Lord work in a way for me to just put me down a path and was like, here, I know you're lost, but let's get you to Oklahoma City because you know this is the right place. Because it took six days. He's like, look, you have a year of just freaking out and you're playing. My dad would always tell me after a round of golf or when I was playing, because he was the assistant coach at my high school, he'd be like, are you playing with the cartel holding your family hostage? He's like, it looks like it. He's like, you're tense. You're freaking out. He's like, you've got to just relax, dude. And it was I'm like, well, I don't know. I'm like, I'm trying to get a college golf scholarship. Like, I don't know. Like, just playing with the weight of the world on my shoulders makes golf so much harder. And I think for me, feeling that weight lifted off by giving it to something greater than myself is huge. I think finding that peace and finding that joy and being able to play golf with happiness versus playing golf with fear and uncertainty is huge. And I think going to Oklahoma City is going to be really cool, because my mom and I went on the visit. My dad was working and we were like, she knew it. I knew it. She was like, so this is where we need to be. And we're like, yeah. So it was super crazy. And I think that's more of a God thing than anything else for me. And I think you can kind of really feel the hand of God when you're in times of doubt and despair, which is really interesting to see how that plays out. And I think the college golf journey has a lot of doubt and despair for anybody that isn't a Power 5 recruit right out of the gate on June 15th or whatever, when college golf coaches are just reaching out and saying, hey, we want you. Because I was at TCU. I think you can talk to coaches going into your June of your junior year. And so I was at TCU on a prospect camp. The coach reached out. I was getting recruited by TCU, and they said, hey, we want you to come down to Fort Worth for a prospect camp. We're going to put you against some of the best players in Texas. We want to see what it's like. And I had the pleasure to work with Coach Mork, who's actually the head coach now at Florida Atlantic University, and Coach Monteagle, who ended up retiring from TCU. And they were like, you look good, but we don't think you're the right guy for us. And I'm like, well, okay, this is over the weekend where college golf coaches can reach out and give you scholarships. So I'm sitting in a hotel room and it's 110 degrees outside in Fort Worth. And I'm like, okay, what college golf coach is going to reach out? I got nothing. And you're like, oh man. And so you kind of just started off. You're like, okay, man, this is not going to end up the way we wanted to. And I think that doubt and despair started really early. And I think as a golfer, golf's hard enough. That's what I've all. That's what my dad has always told me. He's like, dude, golf's hard enough.
Certainly is.
Take it easy. He's like, golf beats you up already. Don't be acting like this is the end of the world. And I'm like, Dad, it's the end of the world. And so, I think it's super, super crazy to see that. And I think, for me, I think there's a lot of college golfers that I've talked to that are like, yeah, college golf is different than high school golf. But I also think there's aspects of high school golf in terms of being a recruit and not knowing where you're going that are stressful, if not more stressful than grinding it out in college. Because you're qualifying every week. Sure, that's stressful, but at least you know where you're at. So I think that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy and kind of an amazing story. College golf is very different from what I remember. Like, it's very much on you in college. Not like it's not in high school, but at least with high school, like, at least I remember my high school team being this whole other experience that's like a lot of fun, sort of just the age you're at. And then in college, like, there's just different levels of sort of people's ambition and especially those tournaments. Like, what is cool about golf is you'll go to a collegiate tournament and it's, you know, 20 teams. You sort of cross over different conferences, and even if you're not at whatever Georgia, like, you could be at the same tournament as them. So, like, there's a lot of these different cool things where you'll still get to compete against the best. And it very much is, you know, you just whatever number you shoot is going to be the way that you show yourself. But I guess, like, that's gonna be my next question, is like, thinking towards college, what are you looking to get out of college golf, and like, how are you approaching it?
I've kind of always been a little torn with it. So for me, with my golf game, I obviously want to take that as far as I can go. So for me, my aspirations of playing on the PGA Tour or playing on LIV are huge. That's what I want to do. I want to go play golf for as long as I possibly can. But looking at the stats, as a golfer, we're big numbers guys. I mean, I'm out there shooting a pin and it's 120 and a half yards. You're like, we're always looking at numbers. And so looking at stats, the odds of me going at an NAIA school, going to the PGA Tour, whether that's through the Canadian Tour or whatever tour it is extremely slim. So part of me is like, yeah, I'm going to go play at Augusta and win the Masters. Like, the little six-year-old me putting in the house to win the U.S. Open or whatever, or win the Masters. I have that dream, and I want to run that dream as long as I possibly can. But I also want to be partially realistic, be like, okay, let's look at what we can do to get the most out of my education to be able to provide for myself in a future family. And I think for me, I'm going to be majoring in finance, kind of business finance, and then do pre-law. So for me, I kind of want to set up myself to be successful to where if I graduate with my major in finance or whatever it is, and then I take some time off and go try and play professional golf, I can go to that law school and still be able to be set up. Like, if I have a law degree and I'm not ready to go practice or whatever, I can go try and play golf knowing that I have some kind of job security back home. And I think trying to balance both the educational side and the athletic side is really huge. I think for me, if I could go play lights out golf and shoot 65 every time, and big schools are like, hey, come out and play for us on a full ride, like, I'm going to really look into that, because PGA Tour U doesn't work through NAIA. Like, if I want to go make the PGA Tour out of the gate, PGA Tour U or Korn Ferry or whatever is going to be my best bet. And I think for me, trying to do that would be awesome. But if my golf game isn't there, or I need to mature my golf game, I'm totally content and happy with where I'm at going to Oklahoma City. I love it down there. The coach is awesome. The team is great. I mean, I already have my roommate down there. I've been talking to him about golf, and it's going to be a blast. I think I'm really looking forward to freshman year. And I think it's really easy for me to get 10 years down the road when I can just, if I can try and focus more on the present and realize that, yeah, man, you're going to college golf scholarship, going to Oklahoma City. Your parents don't have to pay a bunch. Right. And I think enjoying the moment has always been tough for me, but I feel like I'm getting a little better at it. And the more I've gotten a little better at it, the more content I am with where I'm at. And I think that's super cool. And I think being able to just go out and play golf a little more freely and a little more happily is going to be crazy for my golf game. Because if I can go out and shoot 71 at
it
U.S.
is,
Open
it is crazy.
Qualifying,
I think
and I'm
so
shaking
much
over
of
every
golf,
4-foot
whether
putt
it's high school, college,
because
professional,
I need to go make a college golf scholarship. Versus now, I'm like, I don't. Whoop-de-doo. I can go shoot 85 and feel great about it, or not feel great about it. I'm still going to be pissed about shooting an 85. But it's like now we get to now we once we get off the golf course, now I'm able to go live my life. Right, I'm not carrying things off the golf course into my personal life that's going to cause me to be more depressed or anxious or anything like that, because high school's hard enough. Going from in my junior year, I was traveling, missing cuts by one stroke, and then I have to go back and take the ACT and then go take an AP human geography test. It just beats you down. So allowing golf to be on the golf course and allowing life to be off the golf course is huge. And I think I'm getting a little better at that. And I think that's going to be awesome going into college, being able to live my life and also being able to be a golfer. I think being able to be content both on and off the golf course is crucial for my game. I think it's crucial for a lot of golfers. I think a lot of golfers get life tied up and it affects their golf game. I mean, we can look at 2009 Tiger Woods. I mean, life got tied up and it's like, oh crap, right? He's done. And so I think just looking at being content and being happy with where we're at, I think that's also a lot to say with where I've been able to strengthen my faith. I think that's crucial in doing that. So I think that's really important. I think that's really helpful for any golfer. I think being able to have a support system and being able to have close family and friends. I think for me personally, being at the club at Ravenna, my coach is there. I have a great support system at Ravenna. And then zooming out a little bit, I have a great support system with my family and people around me. I think there's a lot of people who want me to be successful. And so that has made it so much lighter on me. And I think carrying a burden with 20 people helping you out versus carrying a burden by yourself, I mean, it's a lot easier. And I'm extremely grateful for everybody at Ravenna. And I'm extremely grateful for my family and friends.
Yeah,
I think that's crucial. And I mean, looking at Banty, it's really cool to kind of see what you guys are doing. And I think, so one of the guys at Ravenna was one of the original guys on. He's like, hey, you should look at this. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I should. And then kind of got talking to Billy, and it's been super cool. I think the app is going to be great. I'm excited for that. And I know I just interrupted you, so I'm sorry.
No, you're good. It is funny. Like, we got connected last year when we were kind of in this private beta, and we actually just rolled out now this new communities feature, which includes all of these college teams. So it'll be cool to kind of see you on there repping Oklahoma City and kind of building out the network of college golfers. My last question for you, actually, because you mentioned LIV, and I think one of the best things that you can give LIV credit for is actually, like, at least creating an alternative path for people to try to play golf professionally in what has otherwise been just a total, both like a monopoly, but also just like an impossible system for people to break into the PGA golf world. Like, PGA Tour U is great. I think that that's a really good system, but it is cool that there's a little bit more of a market for people in your shoes entering college and trying to think about it as a potential future. So, like, I am curious to get your outlook just on the situation, like, as you see it, and especially as, like, an aspiring professional.
I think the LIV golf situation with the PGA is very interesting because LIV is backed by the Saudis, who have money that's incomprehensible. Like, the amount of money that the Saudis have is unreal. And so looking at Monahan last year going up and saying, I'm going to take the Saudis to court. Like, that's just, it's the reason they merge, because the PGA Tour is running out of money. And to see these signature, like, for me, looking at the signature events, it's just kind of their get back at the LIV. And for me, going out and signing a paycheck before you even play on LIV is huge. It's guaranteed money. For somebody who isn't going to be the Jordan Spieth of the world, where I'm going to go out at 19 and win the John Deere, I'll take guaranteed money all day. I mean, look at, I don't know what his name is, but he's from Tennessee. He just signed with LIV. He's playing on one of those teams. And he just made a few million bucks.
Caleb Surratt, is that him?
Yes. And so I think for me, I really love the traditional side of golf. And I really like how the PGA Tour is trying to preserve that. But as many routes as there are possible for me to go play professional golf and make money, so be it. Because, I mean, if you look at PGA Tour U, the top 20 guys get exemptions into the Canadian Tour, the Korn Ferry, and the PGA. The top two go to the PGA. Then it's 3 through 10 go to Korn Ferry, and then 10 through 20 go to the Canadian Tour. So then we look at percentages from the Canadian Tour to get to the PGA. You're looking at small percentages. And it's like, you're really, the PGA Tour is going to say, we're PGA Tour you. We're going to set up all these college golfers for success. And you're like, you're going to set up 1 to 2, hopefully. There's a reason Nick Dunlap didn't go back to Alabama. He won the Amex and was like, I can either go to the University of Alabama, get some NIL money, do whatever, and then maybe try to go make it back on the PGA Tour. Or I can take my exemptions, turn pro, and then go grind it out on the PGA Tour and win some money. It's like, with the NIL deals, it's really interesting to see that, because Nick Dunlap could have gone back to Alabama as a top guy, making a bunch of money with his Adidas sponsorships and all that. But he can also make the same amount of money, go out and now win money because he's not an AM, and he gets to keep his exemptions to go play in majors. And so I think, looking at it from the perspective of the top guy, there's a reason Nick Dunlap went to the professional golf tour. Like, I'm surprised that Liv hasn't tried harder to get Dunlap, because Dunlap is kind of this new age of golfers, to where we can look at Christio Lamprecht and all of these guys on PGA Tour U. I'm very interested to see what Liv does with all of those guys on PGA Tour U that are on the bubble. Like, you can look at Ben Lorenz for Oklahoma, and he's sitting at like 12 right now.
Right.
Would you rather, the question is, would you rather go play on the Korn Ferry and go through Q school, which is borderline hell for any golfer, or would you rather go sign for $5 million or however much money they're going to give you to just go play 54 holes, listen to rave music, and wear shorts? I mean, for me, it's, I have no problems. I have no problems with Liv.
It'll be interesting. I think that is, to your point, like, where the battle will play out, so to speak, is actually, like, there's been these major signings at like the top 10 in the world, like John Rahm. But I feel like the rest of the fight is now going to be the guys in college and what happens there over the next few years.
And I also think if Monahan's going to be smart, he's got to merge. And I think that's going to be crazy. And I think there's already been like a merger, but they're still not merged.
Yeah.
If they've got to merge, because the Saudis can buy the PGA Tour whenever they want.
Right.
The question is do you want the brand to be the same? Because so many more, there's a reason why Full Swing has two seasons and is trending on Netflix right now. And it's not because everybody likes watching Rory McIlroy play golf. Everybody likes Rory McIlroy in the locker room arguing about things, talking about Liv, and then all of the drama in the PGA Tour world. I think that's what's drawn people to golf, is the drama.
Yeah.
So the Saudis' marketing is, let's make this as dramatic as possible, make some money off of this, and then merge. And the PGA Tour is freaking out because they can't afford to battle Liv, but they also are going to try and preserve the history of the game. For me, the history of the game, for me personally, if I want to talk about history, it's either going and playing at the Open in St. Andrews, which is not a PGA Tour sanctioned event. Both Liv players and PGA Tours can play there. And driving down Mongolia Lane, going and playing at Augusta. Those are the two things for me that are the most historically relevant aspects of golf. They're trying to say, we wear pants and we play Thursday through Sunday, and we're trying to do the same things that happened 50 years ago. And I think that tradition isn't really tradition. It's more of just what the PGA Tour thinks golf is. And I think totally it's more of the modern approach of Liv.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it's Players Week now, right? So, like, it's the perfect example of what was the quintessential, like, PGA Tour product. But it doesn't hold a candle to your point, like, Augusta or the Open. And that now the field is definitely taking a hit because of Liv. So, like, the PGA Tour brand, I think they used to benefit by just being associated with the majors, but the fact that now it's become clear that they're really not, it's less clear what their product or differentiators actually are. So yeah, there's this whole identity crisis that I think we're all going through.
I think it's crazy to see that. And I think the PGA Tour and Liv are closer related than people want to put it as.
Totally.
At the end of the day, I mean, for me, looking at Bay Hill,
yeah,
you're looking at guys shanking golf shots and missing four footers. Like, we're not looking at the highlight reel stuff that John Rahm and Brooks Koepka and all of these guys were putting on. Those strong fields in the PGA, I think, are what's lacking right now. I think we can still see the dominant guys in the PGA. We can look at Scotty, who, for me, I really idolize my golf game after. I think Scotty's approach mentally and both on the golf course is really, really good. And he also putts a lot like me. So both looking at how he's putting and trying to figure out the putting yips, for me, putting's never been my best part of my game. And I'm like, okay, so I've got to look at Scotty. Scotty's going out. He won at Bay Hill. He's kind of turning it on. And I think at Augusta, Scotty could give it a really good run.
Yeah.
But we're looking at guys, and you're just looking at PGA Tour. Like, whenever you pull up the PGA Tour on a Friday afternoon, and you're looking at the leaderboard, you're like, who are these guys? Look at, like, the Cosmic, or whatever you call it, or, like, the Honda at PGA National, where I've played.
Right. I mean,
however, I don't understand why tournaments are named like that. I know they're big names and whatever and companies, but you got to make it pronounceable. Of course. But yeah. Looking at that, I mean, Ekrot, is that the guy who
Austin
won?
Austin Ekrot, yeah.
Yeah. Who is Austin Ekrot? Like, that's the thing. Like, you have these guys that are going out, and they're really good golfers. And I think there's so many golfers that are under the radar that could be top 10 potential. I think you can look at these guys that are making these runs and all of that, that are really, really good. And I think that's the beauty of golf, is I think there's so many guys out there that are on the Corn Ferry and the bottom rankings of the PGA Tour that are under the radar that can still throw up big numbers, like that can still throw up really low numbers and be successful. And I think that's what the PGA Tour is kind of showing their cards as, is big names are leaving, going to live, is because you have the washed up guys that are all the old washed up European guys on live, but you also have the John Rahm and the Brooks Koepka and the Taylor Gooch and all of these guys that have been so dominant going out to live. And you have, now you're kind of seeing these guys emerge on the PGA Tour. And that's super interesting because golf is as much luck as it is skill. Once you get to a +6 handicap, because what defines you being on the Corn Ferry and what you being world number 10 in the PGA Tour could be two shots. Like, playing, getting lucky and playing at the right time is just as important as being dominant in the PGA Tour, because you can look at all of these guys that are on the bubble and they're really good golfers. And it's just kind of, it's all timing. And that's what I've kind of learned, is you've just got to play good at the right time. For me, if I wanted to go play at a big Division I school, I had to go out and win an AJGA. Have I ever done that? No. Have I been close? No. But watching these guys going out, and they're like, I mean, I had a friend, he's from Colorado, and we were playing in California in an AJGA, and he had a brutal high school season. And then he went out and shot 68, 69, and then like 71 in California and took second in AJGA. And you're like, how do you do that? You just were shooting 80 in Colorado.
You just got to turn it on.
And you're just right time, right place, right time. And I think that's huge with golf, and that makes it so interesting.
Yeah, it is all about when you are in one of those windows, like, how do you capture as much value as you can and, you know, win the right events at the right time? Totally.
And I think for golfers, we all kind of have those streaks. Like, golfers are streaky. There's no not streaky golfers. I mean, you can look at Tiger Woods being dominant for that long, but that's a once in a lifetime kind of deal. You can look at all of these guys that are playing good, playing bad, playing good, playing bad again. And I think harnessing the really good things while you're playing really good golf. I mean, I had 2 weeks out here in Colorado during the summer where I couldn't shoot worse than 70. Like, I was just going out wherever and just posting unreal numbers. And I'm like, okay, this is awesome. But then you know, at some point in time, you're going to shoot 75. And you're like, okay, what am I going to do there? And so harnessing the good things that when you're playing streaky is really cool. And I think that's really important. But I also think that acknowledging that streaks are going to happen, and there's such things as bad streaks too, which is not good for any golfer, but it's pretty much certain.
Totally. I think to your point, like, you sort of have to not give yourself too much credit for the hot streaks so that you know not to be too hard on yourself on the cold streaks. It kind of goes both ways.
Exactly.
All right, Jack, I had you for way too long. You've been super generous with your time.
No, I appreciate it.
We gotta have you back on. It's been a blast, and I think I'm curious to hear how now like the season goes now that you sort of have school settled. I think that'll be awesome for you. And then sort of what college ends up being like. We're gonna have to have you back on. But
for sure. I really enjoyed it.
Final question is gonna be, is Scottie Scheffler the best player in the world?
Is Scottie Scheffler the best putter in the world?
The best player.
Best player. Okay. Because I was gonna say best putter, I don't know. But best player, I mean, for me personally, I've always been a big Scottie fan. And for me, I observe the best player in the world as somebody who is dominant in tournaments, regardless if they're winning. They're always going to be present. If you had a locker room full of PGA Tour guys on a Sunday, somebody's like, okay, Scottie's going to make a run. You know, yeah. Scottie's going to make a run. And for me, I think knowing that guy's presence, if I was playing in a PGA Tour tournament and Scottie Scheffler was 3 strokes off, I'd be losing my mind. I'd be like, I am so dead, because I know for a fact Scottie Scheffler is going to go shoot whatever he needs to in order to win this golf tournament. So for me personally, I think Scottie Scheffler is by far the best player in the world.
He's definitely the scariest name on the leaderboard that I would be worried about.
And I think just looking at it from the perspective of Bay Hill last week, he was always in the mix until he turned it on Sunday. And then there was no more mix. Scheffler was just running away with it. And I think as a golfer building up, if you're able to make cuts and stay within 5 shots of the lead on Saturday, and you're able to go make something happen on those Saturdays on moving day, Scottie Scheffler's such a good moving day player to where he can set himself up to not only be confident in his game, but to also be very successful on Sundays. I mean, we can look at his players run last year, where I think this year, if I was to put money on it, and I know Vegas probably would too, and I hate agreeing with Vegas because I'm always wrong, but
right.
Scottie Scheffler's going to make a great run. And I think Scottie Scheffler is by far the world number one because he's owning it off the tee. His ball striking is up there with Tiger. His chipping, I mean, besides Jordan Spieth, who's never in regulation ever, his chipping is up there. And Jordan Spieth has to be good at chipping because he's never putting for birdie. So he has to get up and down for par. And I think being able to get good at something when your game isn't being pressured on it is huge. And I think Scottie Scheffler does that so well to where that's why I would argue he's number one. Is because if you're hitting every fairway and you're hitting every green, which he's doing, and then you all of a sudden miss a green and you're in the rough, especially at Bay Hill where the rough is nasty, you can mess up. And I mean, Scottie's never in bunkers. He's never in the rough because he's always in regulation. But his game when he's scrambling is just as good.
It's so good.
So it's unreal to see him scramble when he's never scrambling because he's that good off the tee and off the fairway. And so I think there's a reason Rory McIlroy was like, I really hope Scottie Scheffler doesn't warm up his putter, because he owns golf in every other aspect except for putting. And he's still winning golf tournaments, which is crazy for me to think. And I mean, Scottie displayed it. He can make putts. Because he went 17 for 17 inside 15 feet on Sunday at Bay Hill. So if Scottie can get hot with the putter, it's majors aren't him. He's going to be the next Brooks Koepka in majors. Like, you're just like, where's Scottie?
And I think he's going to off a bunch.
I think he'll get to double digit majors within the next 6 years.
Wow. All right. Well, you heard it here.
That's
first.
My hot take. And I don't think it's that take. Hot, but I think it's a good take.
It is a good take. All right, well, Jack, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you? Anything else we should leave the audience with?
Yeah, I think I'm on Instagram. I'm not a huge post guy, but I'm on there a little bit. You guys could definitely give me a follow. Anybody listening, I kind of stay updated on stuff. I'd love to get back on the podcast sometime soon. I appreciate you having me.
Perfect, man. Well, thank you again. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate it.
boomerang, a tank of a round round. Wanna hit the top top.
Ooh, la 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 la.
Chip puck, you know what's the big whoop? When I play my game and then I make my mama proud.
Woo! Smash bang, you gotta hit the ball far. Then the crowd goes, woo! Then you hear the
ooh, la 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 la.
Treat, treat. I want my birthdays all day long. Let the bogeys go.